This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Andrei Kudrescu is probably the only self-described Dadaist who is a regular contributor to NPR's All Things Considered. Clichés, telephones, insomnia, dread, Stalin, and hamburgers have all been subjects of his commentaries. Kudrescu grew up in Romania and emigrated to the U.S. in 1966 at the age of 19. He sees himself as the perpetual outsider, but this seems to have equipped him with a built-in radar that searches out the absurdities of American culture. Since 1983, he's edited a literary magazine called The Exquisite Corpse, which is published in Louisiana, where he teaches English at Louisiana State University. His new book, The Disappearance of the Outside, A Manifesto for Escape, is part memoir about his life in Romania and America, and part meditation on imagination, politics, and culture. Last December, Kudrescu returned to Romania for the first time to witness the fall of the Ceausescu regime. The foreword to his new book was written in Romania on the last day of 1989. He thought the euphoria in Romania would not be long-lived. He was right, but I wanted to know what led him to that conclusion last year.
Well, this is either wisdom or some kind of belief that I've held for a long time that things usually get worse. The Buddhists are right when they say life is sorrow. It's a good thing to know because then you can only go up from there. But I also figured that the euphoria would not last very long because the hard reality would soon hit everybody in Romania. The fact that there really still is no food, the fact that they still don't have any interior liberty. People take a while to start talking out loud after they've been whispering for 45 years. It took me 2 years after I came to America to just talk about politics in a normal tone of voice.
When you went back to Romania, did you find yourself imagining what life you probably would have ended up living had you stayed there?
I thought about that even before I went back to Romania. I knew that I was headed for trouble when I was 17 years old because I was writing these vaguely symbolic and threatening poems against the government. I was a baby dissident. I knew that if I had stayed, I would have been one of the more serious dissidents eventually and ended up in prison. It's the only alternative I could see for myself. What happened to my colleagues in high school and in the first year of college is something that I'm going to find out this time because I'm going back July 1st, and on July 8th, I am having my 25th high school reunion.
Oh, you're kidding.
So I'm going to see all these people whose faces I remember vaguely from looking at the photograph, but whose peculiar habits and the way they were. I remember very little about that.
So are you going back not knowing which friends ended up in prison and which friends became bureaucrats?
Right. I want to see how many of them are in the secret police and how many emigrated and how many are dead. There weren't a whole lot of us in this particular class, so I should be able to find what happened to almost everyone.
And do you have an old girlfriend you're going to look up?
Well, I did have a crush on someone there. Crush, is it, or crash?
Crush.
Crush. Yes, that's the one. But not, I had a girlfriend who was in another high school. So,
She won't be there?
No, and she lives in Canada now.
You came to the United States when you were 19 years old, right?
Yes.
How were you able to get out of Romania?
Well, let's see now. I swam a very large river.
Yeah, really.
There were wild animals there. How did I get out? It was about 1965, and things were fairly liberal. Ceausescu had just come to power. They were giving a number of visas to Jews who wanted to emigrate. They were buying Jews, actually. They were selling Jews. Romanians are selling Jews at $10,000 a head to the State of Israel. And my mother and I were two of those lucky ones to get bought. So that's how we came out.
But you didn't live in Israel?
No. In Italy, we applied for visa for residencies to various places, and Australia, Canada, and the United States accepted us, but I had no intention of going over to those places.
Well, in your book, you write that your generation wanted to escape, not fight. What do you mean by that?
Well, we were hearing in Romania rock and roll, which was coming from the other side of the Iron Curtain. That was the Pied Piper. I heard it and I wanted to go where the rock and roll was, and I knew it was coming from America. We wanted to escape the boredom, first of all, of Eastern Europe of those days in Romania. The sort of gray, monotonous, monochrome society that we were living in. We wanted to escape from the dullness of our parents and from the quietness of the country, from that whole repressed way of doing things. And what we wanted to escape into was the loud and world, which was 19 years old at the time. The whole world was 19 years old in 1965.
My guest is Andrei Codrescu, and you probably know him as a commentator on All Things Considered. He's also a poet, an essayist. He edits a literary journal called The Exquisite Corpse, and he has a new book called The Disappearance of the Outside. You came to the States in 1966. So you came from a culture of censorship to a culture where within a couple of years, a lot of the people of your age were dropping acid, saying very politically radical things, participating in outdoor huge rock festivals, in participating in huge political demonstrations. I mean, things were pretty wild at that time. Did you try to fit into that? And what was it like coming from a place where you really had to be careful all the time?
Well, I took to it like a fish to water, or a fish to sushi. Use a more up-to-date metaphor. I immediately felt at home within my generation. I felt much more sympathy with people my age who were doing that sort of thing than I felt with mainstream literary people who I also checked out for a little while. I felt that I finally came to a place where you could not only speak, but you could have the possibility to remake the world in another way. I thought I landed in utopia. I didn't realize that a few years later, everything emptied like a Mexican town at siesta time. But for the period between about 66 to about 73, when I think the 60s officially ended, I thought that my personal condition of exile and of impermanence and of searching and of youth had become generalized, and everybody in the world was going to find out ways to live greatly with each other and love each other and be terrific somehow, distribute nothing but the energy of evolutionary light.
Well, you know, you said it took you about 2 years before you could speak in a normal voice when you were talking about politics because you were so used to doing it in a whisper that couldn't be overheard. How did your speaking style change in the first few years after you arrived in the States?
Well, I may be exaggerating about 2 years. I started to say these things that I thought were impossible to say before, and I found that I found a great deal of indifference, too. I found that writers, for instance, in this country, while they could say things, they didn't have that many listeners. In Romania, if you said anything, there are 10 people watching who are always ready to milk your statements for innuendo and find out what you're actually saying, which is very flattering to a writer. But here you could say a lot of things and nobody listened. And so I very rapidly went through a number of stages. One is talking very loud about things I couldn't talk about before, like politics and sex and all sorts of things that were forbidden there. And then trying to find a way to say them that people paid attention to, which was a little more difficult, probably took longer. So I just babbled like an idiot for a while there.
Since you were used to using more innuendo to talk about something, did you have to learn a more forward, direct style of writing and speaking?
Yes. Well, I think American English lends itself greatly to directness. You can say things that you mean in English in a few words. The Romanian is a more oblique language. It's more poetic. It's been formed through thousands of years of occupying armies, and so people had to be careful about what they said, because they said things that sounded one way to their friends and another way to their enemies, and they created ambiguous languages, poetic ways of speaking.
I know you've had a long-term interest in Dadaism and Surrealism. I was wondering if you had that before you moved to the States, or if the kind of disjointed associations of being a Romanian in America helped deepen your appreciation for the kind of juxtapositions of Dadaism and Surrealism.
Well, both. In Romania, we feel intimately connected to Dada and Surrealism because Tristan Tzara, the founder of Dadaism, was Romanian. And the founder of the Theater of the Absurd, Ionesco, is also Romanian. The country itself is surrealist. The Balkans are surrealist in general. We feel very close to that. It could very well be that that's our classical literature and culture.
To you, Romania is the home of the Dadaist Tristan Tzara. To many Americans, growing up on movies, Romania is the home of Count Dracula. And I know throughout your life in America, you've been asked by people all the time about what the stories are of Dracula in Romania. So let me ask you, too, because I'd really love to hear this, being a great fan of the American and English Dracula films. Did you grow up with Dracula stories?
Well, no, he was one of our national heroes. He was on the wall of my classroom along with Lenin, Marx, Stalin, and Gheorghe Udej, and then Ceausescu. He was the founder of the Romanian nation, Vlad the Impaler. He was a very well-regarded, by Romanian historians anyway, ruler from the 16th century who had the unfortunate but effective habit of impaling his victims on stakes.
Putting their heads on stakes.
You know, sometimes the whole victim, there are various ways of doing it, either through the belly button or the heart or the neck, depending how lenient he felt. It gave rise to his legend anyway. And then Bram Stoker, an Englishman, took the story and personalized and sexualized it for Victorian England and made him into a kind of late-night caller gentleman who makes the virgins vampires by swaying them little by little with neck bites that get increasingly more ferocious. I wasn't too interested in him when I first came, but he was great. I mean, I found myself drawn, so I started to look at all the movies and the books.
You have a wonderful observation about Dracula the vampire, that he discovered immortality but found out that the real problem was inventing ways to stay interested in life.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel the same way. I think that living hundreds of years would really be a test of the imagination.
Andrei Codrescu is my guest, and he's a commentator on All Things Considered. He's a writer, poet, editor of the literary journal The Exquisite Corpse, and author of the new book, The Disappearance of the Outside, A Manifesto for Escape. You became an American citizen in 1981.
Yes.
What was that day like for you?
That was a wonderful day. I fought the immigration department for 10 years to become an American citizen. I saw my file, which was, I looked at it, I didn't see what's inside. It was about 10 inches thick. And when I looked at it, my whole life passed before my eyes, because file is just an anagram for life. And finally, one day, they let me be an American citizen, and I was number one on the list in Baltimore, Maryland. There were mainly Asians and some Russians becoming citizens. And afterwards, we had a grand party in which all my friends gave me American-type things, like little American flag toothpicks and cherry pies. There were fireworks and a baseball signed by all my friends, so I was initiated good.
When you said you were number one in Baltimore, what do you mean by that?
Well, I'd been on the list, on the waiting list for so long.
Oh.
Because they studied me for 10 years before they let me be an American citizen. The FBI had two investigations that fizzled out because one of the agents retired with my file, and the other one, I don't know, I think gave up.
What were they investigating you
he
for?
He became an artist. Well, when I first came here, I used to write for a Detroit newspaper called The Fifth Estate. And I knew people who were founders of the movement against the war in Vietnam, and I hung out with a fairly radical crowd, and so I was part of all the people they were watching all the time. I had my phone tapped for a little while, which was a disappointing experience. Because when I asked for my transcripts under the Freedom of Information Act, I didn't get back all my wonderful words. What I got back was a bureaucratic summary. The Boswells of the bureaucracy failed.
So even reading your own FBI file, you're the literary critic.
Well, I was hoping that I would have a third autobiography that would be transcribed for free by the FBI.
Well, so how did it feel then to be living in America and find out that your phone was being tapped and that you were being investigated and watched over? Did you feel that you were being cheated out of what democracy had promised to you?
Well, no, I felt flattered that anyone would pay attention. I mean, I can imagine that being left out of Nixon's enemy list would have felt terrible to some people. I know that in Romania, for instance, my name couldn't be used not even in crossword puzzles, which I always liked because I could just imagine someone starting a revolution with a crossword puzzle saying three across lives in New Orleans, likes crawfish. But, well, yes, I mean, on the one hand, I was distressed that I was watched. On the other hand, I felt like... probably that was the thing they should do. I mean, what else should the police do except watch artists, anarchists, radicals, troublemakers?
What was it that got you the status of being unmentionable in Romania?
Well, I wrote some funny little poems that were symbolically and obliquely taking on the regime. I think I said some things like the thin, skinny, red cow grazes the hay of a pale dawn, which is funny because it doesn't mean anything to anyone here, but I think that in to any sense of reading it there, it would probably mean you're making fun of all the pious cliches of communism, which always mention things like dawn, red dawn, and so on.
So that's the kind of code that you had to write in.
Yeah, but it was very transparent code. Yeah. Unfortunately, it was transparent only to other writers and intellectuals. Somebody working in a factory out there like a miner would certainly not know or care what you're talking about.
So what's your status in Romania now?
I should find out on the first... I should find out when I'm going back. I believe that the man who used to be in charge of literary censorship... is now the head of the new Romanian secret police. He's rumored to also be the man who shot Ceausescu personally. So I certainly am known to the organs, as they call them there, and if they're still active, they'll probably give me the honor of a guard, of a shadow at least.
Andrei Cudrescu is my guest. When you were growing up in Romania, when did you become aware of repression, and what did that mean for you as a child?
Well, as a child, not I wasn't aware that anything out of the ordinary was going on until the Hungarian Revolution in 1956. And then I noticed both my mother and my stepfather listening late at night to Radio Free Europe, and telling me that if something happens, and they weren't very specific about what, we should be ready to leave the house and move. And there was an atmosphere of tension there. I knew a little bit about that, but later I found out that there were books that I couldn't read. And I wanted to read them, and I found out that they were forbidden, but not just to me, but to adults as well. And I found an old professor at a high school there, retired, who had a lot of these forbidden books in his library. And one by one, he lent them to me and to one of my friends. And we became aware that there was a whole world that we had no access to. We started reading. And then slowly we started to understand that there were lots and lots of things that were not spoken about, that we had taken for granted that you shouldn't speak about certain things. And we realized that we're surrounded by a universe of silence, by the words no, 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 no. There were lots of doors that had the word no on them. From that to wanting to open them and see what's in there wasn't a very big step, especially for an adolescent.
Do you think having books that were forbidden helped deepen your appreciation of books?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was wonderful to read books surreptitiously and know something that others didn't. I think a parallel to that is books like James Joyce's Ulysses and Henry Miller's books, or D.H. Lawrence in this country in the 50s. They were read secretly by people. They were not taught in schools, and that must have felt wonderful. Now you teach them in schools and the students just yawn.
Do you ever miss the Romanian language? Would you like to be able to write in it?
I was very happy to go back and be in it for some time, to hear people on the street talk it. And I sat in a coffee house and just listened. It was like a warm bath. It reminded me of being a child and listening to adults speak all around you. It's a comforting and safe feeling. And some of that came back to me. I miss the kind of familiarity that makes it easy to say wonderful things without even thinking about them.
Well, Andrei Crăjescu, I hope you have a good trip back to Romania.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for talking with us.
Yeah, thanks, Terry.
And Andrei Crăjescu has a new book out called The Disappearance of the Outside, A Manifesto for Escape. It's just been published by Addison Wesley. You can hear his commentaries on All Things Considered, and he also edits the literary journal The Exquisite Corpse. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.